Welcome to the Northeast Christian Podcast. We're so excited that you've decided to check out our weekly messages. We hope that you're challenged and inspired by what you're hearing today. We'd love to have you join us this weekend at one of our campuses or online at northeast.live. For more information on Northeast, visit us at necchurch.org. If you love the Northeast Podcast, subscribe to our channel and leave us a comment or a rating in the Apple Podcast Store.
Look at you. You made it, and I am so proud of all y'all. I'm even proud, though, of all y'all who are joining us online this morning. I know that we broke online records at 9 a.m. and 11 a.m. I wonder why. Okay, so for the hundreds upon hundreds, I think we had over 300 unique screens viewing the service when our guys told me before I walked on stage, and there are multiple people in front of every screen. So for over 1,000 people who are with us right now online, I want to welcome you, and I want to tell you that I feel like our team has done such a good job at making our online experience so quality and engaging that there's really no reason for you to ever miss church or for you not to engage in the service in similar ways that you would while you're here. You can sing, you can make yourself a cup of coffee, you can interact with other folks in the comment section, you can still give, necchurch.org/give, and let me remind you, when people don't come to church, they don't give, but it's your generosity that fuels our church, and you can serve your church from home right now today. You know how? By inviting a friend. Snow days are the best days to invite others because there are folks from other churches looking for a church service this morning that couldn't get out. And there are a lot of your friends who may not have a church that are sitting at home on this snow day sort of twiddling their thumbs wondering what they should do. So I encourage you, send this link out to a friend right now. Share this on your social media page and welcome folks into our room today, even if it's on a screen. Now, it is my great pleasure today to kick off or to continue for you week two of a series that we kicked off last week, first series of 2019, called Living My Best Life, a 21-day challenge to purpose. And if you weren't here last week, then I would just encourage you, you need to get online and catch up because this is a unique series in which every sermon builds one on top of the other. And so you're not going to wrap your mind around the fullness of the truth in this series unless you listen to all the messages, preferably one after the other. And I would also say this to you. If you haven't started our 21-day challenge, you gotta do this. Okay, get on the app. It's all housed on our Northeast Christian Church app. So get on the app. Every day, basically, this challenge will give you about a 10 to 15-minute activity that you can do on your own. Sometimes it's reading, sometimes writing, sometimes reflecting. Sometimes it challenges you to get up out your seat and do something. But I can promise you that if you walk through this 21-day challenge with us, at the end of it all, you will be living a better life. And that's because your best life is an on-purpose life, and this challenge will help you discover your purpose. Now, with that said, last week, to begin the series, I laid some foundational building blocks when it comes to understanding purpose and discovering purpose. And a lot of y'all walked away from the service last weekend excited. I was getting texts and messages and emails from people saying, I'm so pumped up about fine-tuning and honing in on God's true purpose for me and my life. Well, if that's you, thank you for your passion and excitement and sharing it for me. I am so grateful for that. But you should be excited about purpose, no doubt about it. But there is a catch when it comes to purpose that I did not lay out for you last week. It's what I would call the fine print of purpose. You know what I mean when I say the fine print? You ever seen one of those commercials where it's like, man, that's just too good to be true. And then in the last 5 seconds of the commercial, it's like, thank you. You know, and you're like, what just happened? What did they just say? Like you hit pause to try to read the 10-line paragraph that's there, but even on your 50-inch television, it's still too small to read the paragraph. And you're like, is that even say anything right? That's the fine print. And sadly, when it comes to purpose, there is a fine print as well. And the reason why so few people never actually embrace their true purpose is because so few people are willing to embrace the fine print. But I can promise you this. You will never live your life on purpose. You will never live that best life unless you're willing to embrace the fine print. And it pushes back against what you want. I'm just going to go ahead and tell you. It pushes back against your desires. It pushes back against what comes naturally to you. But it is so worth it, and embracing the fine print is absolutely critical for getting your true purpose right. So I'm just gonna lay it out for you as honestly as I possibly can. I'm gonna say it in two or three different ways, and I just want you to maybe just open your heart and begin to chew on it. Okay, because here's the fine print of purpose. If you wanna discover purpose, then you must give yourself to something bigger than yourself that isn't about yourself. And that's the hard part. That isn't about yourself. Basically, if you want to discover your purpose, then you must acknowledge that I am a means to an end. And that's difficult for a lot of us to do. Will you repeat that after me? Let's just practice right now. Say, I am a means to an end. I am a means, not the end. That's the pathway to purpose. And yet, you can't just say it. You actually have to believe it and begin to live it. Now, some of you are like, Tyler, where do you get this whole means to an end idea from when it comes to purpose? You just making that up? Well, no. Actually, this is in the very definition of purpose. You remember our definition from last week, dictionary.com. Purpose is the reason for which anything exists. Basically, for everything, there is some reason, some end out there for which that thing exists as a means to. And the same is true for you. And if you want to begin to discover your purpose, you have to embrace that reality. So maybe I could say it to you like this. Fine print of purpose. You must remember that the me is in the means, not the end. And no wonder so few people ever live their life truly on purpose. Because I want my purpose to be about me, kind of like me. I want my purpose to make me happy. I want my purpose to make me fulfilled. I want my purpose to satisfy me, to maximize my life. Me, 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 me. And yet the catch of purpose is that if you want all that for me, you got to get over me and put me in the means. That's why I think that the question, what is my purpose, isn't the best question. I get that question all the time, but what is my purpose still points the question of purpose at me. See, you know what a better question is than what is my purpose? Who? Who? Who is my purpose? Because when you move across the border from what to who, you move across the border of what's in it for me to I'm in it for who. And that gets us beyond ourselves. Now, Jesus followers in the room, is this not what Jesus called us to anyways? In Matthew chapter 22, verse 37, one of the most epic passages ever recorded from the teachings of Jesus. We hit on this monthly. We build so much of what we're about as a church on this passage right here. Jesus says the following, and I don't want you to miss this. He says, you must love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, and all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment, period. But then there's a second one, and the second one's equally as important. It's on the same level, and that's because I believe that when you accomplish commandment number two, you're accomplishing commandment number one. Here's the second one. Love your neighbor as yourself. The entire law and all the demands of the prophets are based on these two commands. And don't you see? Do you see what Jesus is doing? He's saying, life isn't about what, it's about who. And he gives you your two who's in this passage right here. There's who number one, that would be God. There's who number one B, that would be others. Which means, where does love me fall on the priority list? Well, according to Jesus, love me can be no higher than number three. And in a day where self-love and self-care is so popular to talk about, what I've found is that when you get your priorities right on Jesus' terms, you begin to love yourself, experience more self-confidence, and more self-satisfaction than ever before. but you have to put the me in the means. Now, back to our epic story from last week. This is exactly what our queen Esther was faced with. This very same decision. Am I going to make the me the ends, or am I going to put the me in the means? And she was faced with this question under grave circumstances that most of us will never face. Life or death. Basically, just to recap the story for you, Esther moved from poverty to power when she won a beauty competition. And she became the queen of the world because she married the most powerful king in the world, King Xerxes. Now, when Esther put on her crown, all was well at first. But over time, through a series of unfortunate events, Esther came to find that her people, the Jewish people, the people of Israel, had been sentenced to death. Mass genocide. It was a Holocaust 2,500 years ago. And in that moment, she comes to this realization that she is the only person in the entire world who has the power and the influence and the ear of the king in order to save her people. But she also realizes that if she calls the king out and she lives her life in this moment of purpose on God's terms, then it could cost her her life. And so she's faced with the decision. Save my life or save my people? What am I to do? Now we're going to figure out exactly what she did today. But before I get there, I want to rewind in the story and show you how the story got to this point where this decree went out that the Jews were to be killed. Now to do that, we got to rewind to Esther chapter 3, verse 1. And introduce to ourselves a new character. Last week we met Xerxes, Esther, and Mordecai. This week we get to meet the villain of the story, a man named Haman. And this dude was a powerful guy, but he was also a bad, bad, bad guy. So check this out. Esther chapter 3, verse 1. The scriptures say that sometime later, King Xerxes promoted Haman. There he is, Haman, son of Hammedatha, the Agagite. Now, I know this is going to sound silly, but will you repeat that after me? Say, Agagite. That's right. Good try. We're gonna come back to that. That's actually an important word. Promoted Haman, the Agagite, over all the other nobles, making Haman the most powerful official in the empire. So we're introduced to a powerful man named Xerxes last week, another powerful man named Haman. This week, second most powerful in all the kingdom behind Xerxes. And like most powerful men, if I had to sum up Haman's purpose statement for you, I think I could do it in a pretty simple way. I'm for me. That's what he was about. It says all the king's officials would bow down before Haman, and he loved it. They did it to show him respect whenever he passed by, for so the king had commanded. But there was one, Mordecai, who refused to bow down or show him respect. Now, do you guys remember Mordecai from last week? Mordecai was the cousin of Esther. Mordecai was the caretaker of Esther. He adopted her. And one thing that the story tells us earlier in the book of Esther is that Mordecai was a Jew from the tribe of Benjamin. He was a Benjamite Jew. Now, the reason why I point that out and I make you say Agagite is because one of the only viable explanations that scholars have today for why Mordecai refused to bow to Haman is because of the tension between their ethnic differences. Does anybody know who King Agag was? Haman was an Agagite. Anybody know who King Agag was? Old Testament scholars. Okay, so in order to discover who King Agag was, you have to rewind in the Old Testament all the way to the very beginning of the monarchy of Israel, when Israel got their first king. Now, does anybody know who the first king of Israel was? It was a man named Saul. And Saul was from the tribe of Benjamin. Benjamin. Now, God didn't want Israel to have a king, but they begged God for a king, so he gave him Saul. And at first, Saul was a good king. But over time, his character devolved, and he made some really, really bad decisions that lost him the blessing and the honor and the favor of God. And the first one had to do with his refusal to take out a king named Agag, the king of the Amalekites. God called Saul to be his arm of judgment. He said, I want you to destroy King Agag. Saul disobeyed. And when Saul disobeyed, in 1 Samuel 15, verse 11, this is what God says about him. God said, I'm sorry I ever made Saul king, for he's not been loyal to me and he has refused to obey my command. Ouch. And from that point forward, God sets into motion a chain of events that removes Saul from the throne and puts King David on the throne. Now, fast forward all the way back to Mordecai, Haman, and their tension. And can you begin to see why Mordecai is so disgusted with Haman, refuses to bow before Haman? Perhaps it's because Haman, the Agagite, reminds him of how the very best, most famous Benjamite to ever live failed God. And perhaps it's because Haman, the Agagite, reminds him of the first great disobedience of many disobediences after that the kings of Israel committed over and over and over that ultimately led them to exile. For Mordecai, Haman the Agagite is a reminder of everything that's been wrong with his people. Helps explain it a little bit. And it also helps explain why Haman reacts in such a vengeful, vitriolic way to Mordecai. Verse 5. It says, when Haman saw Mordecai would not bow or show him respect, he was filled with rage. He had learned of Mordecai's nationality. Interesting. So he decided it was not enough to just lay hands on Mordecai. Instead, he looked for a way to destroy all the Jews, all of them, throughout the entire empire of Xerxes. Now, can we just pause for a second, time out, and call it like it is? Maybe I'm crazy, but it seems to me that genocide is a little bit of an extreme response here, Haman. Like, slow your roll, bro. All right? I mean, like, it's okay. Honey, today Morty refused to congratulate me on my promotion. So, you know, I got an idea. Why don't we go grab some ice cream tonight and then burn down his neighborhood while all the children sleep, right? Like, it's like, okay, whoa, like, take a step back, take a deep breath. And yet, underneath Haman's overreaction here is actually a really, really powerful principle that will help you figure out whether you are your end or whether you've placed yourself as a means to some greater end. So here's a question. I want you to consider this. Think about this. Think about this for a second. Question. How emotional do you get when, like Haman, someone hurts your pride, ignores your place, or hinders your progress? How emotional? Can you like shake it off pretty quickly? Or does it burn you up and bug you all day long? Can you forgive and forget? Or do you have to get even? Or better than that, you don't just get even, you gotta get ahead. How emotional do you get? Because see, here's the reality. You're gonna get emotional over your purpose. It's your purpose. If your purpose is the reason for which you exist, you live your life, when someone attacks that, you'll get emotional. It's okay to be passionate about your purpose. In many cases, it's okay to fight for your purpose. But if what you're constantly getting emotional about and what you're constantly getting passionate over and fired up over, if what you're constantly picking fights about is your pride and your place and your progress, then what's your purpose? Well, it's your pride, place, and progress. Keyword being your, you. So how emotional do you get? How emotional? Well, we see how emotional Haman gets. Because he pokes Mordecai in the chest. He says, bro, I'm not just going to take you out. I'm going to take your mama down. I'm going to take your dad out. I'm going to take your brothers, your